This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
A fuel crisis has driven the total for a gas purchase near the need for a bank loan and increased the cost of almost every retail item because petroleum is either used to make it or certainly needed to deliver it. We have a world financial center where businesses more than a century old are going bankrupt. Foreign corporations are purchasing American icons such as Budweiser Beer and the Chrysler Building. Donald Trump recently sold his Palm Beach estate for $95 million to a Russian fertilizer billionaire. For now, Eastern European covers a large strip of Florida's oceanfront property. Foods are dangerous to eat. From hamburger meats to tomatoes to jalapeno peppers. Dietitians tell us not to eat the processed foods because they're bad for our health, but apparently many of the fresh foods are as well. We, and this includes you and me, are still running this country into the ground in some way. Just because you bike to work or eat tofu for dinner and use compact fluorescent light bulbs doesn't mean you aren't part of the problem. Do you vote? Do you breathe? Do you eat? Do you drive? It's become difficult to not find a problematic reaction to every action that we take. We begin using ethanol in our gasoline, and the cost of many farm products rise dramatically. We surge soldiers into Iraq, and the more sectarian violence is there. Better medical research has led to higher drug costs. Longer life expectancy typically means a greater chance of dementia. A more modern world currently creates enormous pollution. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't try for salvation. It just means we shouldn't stop. Expecting defeat is accepting defeat. Smirking over victories will only lead to future failures. Take a deep breath. Have a drink of some sort. Talk about it with others. Do things solely for their virtue. Take care of the animals. Save litter for the trash can. Open the door for the person behind you. Tell people such as myself to stop being so negative. Let's see if there's a problem with that. Pointing out the problems is one thing. Offering aid to the suffering would be better. Don't wait for a leader to take you where you want to go. Everyone can lead themselves. All right, that's me just whining about my Sunday morning. Actually, more like my week. 11:04 here on the wake-up call as we get ready to talk about some of these things. Politics with the boys in the studio today. No girls. No girls wanted to join us. I don't know what that's all about. But let's fire up the microphones and say hi to everybody. My man, Pete Ronayne, here again in the studio as we talk about politics. Pete's specialty. How are you?
Doing well, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're always invited here. Well, not always, but
occasionally,
regularly.
When you're in the mood.
Regularly invited. I don't need you here every Sunday.
No one needs that.
No one needs that. You're right. But people somehow like me here every Sunday. What's up with that, do you think?
It's your, except for the ladies, apparently.
Except for the ladies, apparently. Yeah, I get that a lot. Except for the ladies. Anyway, thank you, Mr. Pete Ronayne, for coming back, because we are going to talk about current politics today. And Pete, adjunct professor. What is that, adjunct professor? I had several people ask me that.
It means I have the pleasure of kind of teaching when I'd like at UVA, which is super because I have a full-time job elsewhere. So
yeah, you also teach at the Federal Executive Institute.
I do.
Which means that some administrative guys from Washington, D.C. come down and learn politics from you.
They learn a lot of things, are some of our dedicated public servants. That's correct.
All right. So Pete Ronayne here in the studio today. And today's goal is to have Pete here to talk about things from the academic side, where we also have guys here, as soon as I push the proper button, to sort of represent the citizens' point of view. Sean McCord, Sean in the studio. Hey, Sean, how are you?
Hey, Rick. Good morning. Good to see you.
Deepak, that one ain't firing up. And we'll get back to Sean in just a second then. But we also have Joe Crisp. Joe, how's your microphone working?
Hopefully it's okay.
Nope. I don't know. It worked on the queue. So we'll take just a second for Deepak to come back in and check that. That happened last week too. But today when we did the test, everything seemed well. So bear with us for a second, guys, as we fix that. Over here on our lovely mixer board, which seems to cause me problems every week. I really don't know what's up with that. Anyway, we are going to be talking about current politics in the studio today, both national and on the Virginia side of things. Pete, tell me where we are on things at the national point. I mean, we've gone through almost the end of July.
Right.
Typically, we would be having at least one convention by now, but we're not.
Right. Conventions are late this year. As most people know, the Democrats will be in Denver from August 25th to 28th, and then the GOP follows that September 1 through 4. So sort of a much later calendar, which is delaying everything and making this pre-convention season with the two presumptive nominees much longer. And keep in mind, we also have the Olympics coming up in August.
So, and what does that have to do with the – I mean, is it because they didn't want to compete with the Olympics? Because
– Well, I'm sure that was probably part of the scheduling, absolutely. I mean, it's a big event naturally and being in China, et cetera. But it is having an impact on the candidates trying to get coverage. I think it had an impact on scheduling the conventions, and it's going to have an impact on the what we'll get into later is the vice presidential choices and the two candidates strategizing on when they'd like to announce that, because so much of August is going to be dominated by Olympic coverage. You don't want your big announcement to get lost in that sea of sporting events. So it's clearly influencing what McCain and Obama are doing.
But what happens is we end up with a convention at the end of August and the start of September.
Yep.
Is that late? I mean, and I don't mean that. Is that too late for things that are going to happen? Because it seems like a very long period of time. I mean, we keep talking about presumptive nominees.
Right, right. We still have to put that qualifier in there. I would argue that it's not really too late, because given the sort of theme and approach of the show today from a citizen's perspective, we're all citizens, but most citizens, we're not really paying attention closely to what's going on until after the conventions. Once you have the two nominees and we remove the presumptive label from their from before their names, then the majority of Americans will start tuning in. I'm not saying that no one's paying attention now, but the majority of Americans aren't policy wonks and really into politics on a day-to-day basis. They have lives, they have work, they have jobs, they have families, and they're busy with that. So it's more than anything, it's really game on starting in really after September, once those two nominees are set. And then things really get into motion. Now, of course, campaigning continues, and Obama and McCain are out there trying to gain momentum and push themselves towards those conventions. But again, I think the majority of Americans, these candidates really get on their political radar once we get to after the convention slot. And then we'll also have the two VPs will have been named, et cetera, and then the real fight towards and push towards November begins.
I'm curious, as we wait for production to fix the microphones for these guys. Actually, I guess I can check one more time. Anybody?
I'm still here, Rick. Can you hear me?
No. We are so professional here at WNRN some weeks.
I presume you can't hear me either.
No, can't hear anybody. I can hear me, and I can hear Pete. Remember to switch that piece over.
It says something that the citizens' voices are disenfranchised on another show.
Yes, well, we'll do that, and we'll pass the microphone around, which is all part of the sharing that we talked about earlier. Pete, let me ask you this real quick. We talk about the pieces being late, the conventions being late. What happens if somebody is unable to accept the presumptive nomination for whatever reason? Who does that hurt most, Republicans or the Democrats?
So something debilitating, something...
Something happens.
Something tragic, in all likelihood.
Sure. Tragic, you can put that word in there.
Who would it hurt the most? I think it would hurt probably the GOP a bit more, because if you actually had to find a successor... there isn't a clear second for the GOP. So let's say it's a bit more a distant second for the Democrats. You know, some terrible scenario, which I mean, Senator Clinton kind of alluded to, not meaning to be cruel about it, but nonetheless, much stronger second place finisher if you needed to have her rally and become the nominee. I mean, I think just in terms of having a nominee, the Democrats would be in better position. But obviously, that's a very distant scenario.
And that's because the convention went on for so long, and or the primary race
primary
went on for
season.
So long, and she was considered to be such a close second place victor.
And she was coming on extremely strong towards the end. If not for the lead that Obama racked up much earlier, but predominantly in caucus states, a little bit longer time, and Senator Clinton might have really closed the gap. But she was very close second. So. A more obvious successor, if we had to get to that point.
All right. We're going to switch methods here and, I guess, just pass the microphone around to our friends. Cut down on your R's. Everyone get close.
We're all going to speak into one microphone. It looks like we're on the We Are the World set singing.
I like that. That's a very nice picture to put in everyone's mind today. I'm going to keep my distance over here, though. All right. I try not to ever ask anyone's political affiliation when we do these types of shows, because to me it's irrelevant. I didn't ask anyone on. This isn't the type of show where I only ask the Republicans or I only ask the Democrats. There are sometimes, like today, when I did try and get a different gender to appear with us, because I think that all too often that the gender brings a different perspective into the office that we may not get here today. But you're welcome to dial up and ask a question. 979-0919 1-877-WNRN rocks if you're a little further out, maybe in Harrisonburg on 95.1. What is to the citizens, what is the number one issue in your mind today? And I'm curious as to whether we get different answers here. Actually, no, real quick, Pete, what do you think the citizens' answer is to this?
The number one issue right now?
The number one issue right now that the academics feel is the number one issue for the citizens.
Well, the polls are suggesting that it's the economy, stupid, with energy as the key subset. Iraq has dropped a couple of positions. It's still important, but because of the situation on the ground there, and what's happening here economically, it's bubbled right back up. So the James Carville adage to Bill Clinton, it's the economy, stupid, keep focusing on that. That is what the numbers are suggesting.
All right. Now pass that microphone over to everybody. Guys, what's your take? I have Sean McCord. I have Joe Crisp here. Joe, since your first visit into the studio, and my gosh, you're really showing off our expertise here today, and I'm not picking on Deepak because, you know, it's just the way things run sometimes. Joe Crisp, what is your take on things? What's most important to you, and what's most important on your vision?
Well, I have to agree with Pete. I mean, I think the economy is clearly the number one issue, but I think the other issues that are out there really revolve around that. They all tie together. I think, you know, if we weren't spending so much money in Iraq, you know, at the rate of billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars a month, I think, we would really have more resources to spend on the things we need. I think revolutionizing our energy policy and really trying to target ways to wean ourselves off of foreign oil, I think is one of the reasons that our economy is in a slump right now. You know, we haven't been proactive about doing that up to this point. You know, you hear a lot of rhetoric about it, of course, during this campaign about, you know, what are we going to do? You know, you hear from one side that, you know, we need to do more drilling. On the other side, we need to explore other energy resources. So I think, you know, the economy is the top issue, but everything else kind of flows from that. You know, I think it's all tied together.
Sean?
Well, I'm going to take a similar tactic to Joe, Rick, and that is you can't pick a single issue because they all dovetail into each other. Now, I got a call from a pollster the other day. She asked me a similar question, and I surprised myself with my answer because I feel like, you know what, the candidates are already talking about the war, and we've pretty established where they are on that. And they're already talking about the economy, and the dust hasn't settled, but we're getting an idea of different economic policies. But ultimately, I don't think that a president impacts the economy as much as the economy itself. When I got a call on this the other day, I found myself talking about the environment because I feel like this is a big issue that we're going to have to deal with, that our children are going to have to deal with, that Lord knows our grandchildren are going to have to deal with, and we need to start dealing with right now. But it's all tied up in how much money we're spending on the war and about our energy policies as well.
Well, let's talk about how much money we're spending on the war. Does it matter to either of you, our citizens on the program today? Certainly, you've both mentioned that we are spending an incredible amount. Do either of you feel that it is necessary? And although, you know, however you felt about it going in, that you feel that it's important to finish what we started?
Well, I think, you know, while a lot of people did oppose the war from the outset, I think now that we're there, we've been there for over 5 years, it's obvious that we do have to finish what we started. We do have to try to emerge from Iraq with some sense of accomplishment, some idea that we changed things for the better over there. And obviously, pulling everybody out, you know, all at once would not only be impossible, but it would also, you know, create more of a disaster than what's already happened. You know, I think many of us understand that we got into the war under false pretenses, that the reasons that the government gave for us for going into Iraq were later found to be incorrect or erroneous, and you know, we're in it now. We can't change that, and we have to find salvage some good from what we've done. And I think, you know, we have to withdraw troops. We have to start pulling people out. We have to start reducing our massive investment in Iraq in terms of a military expenditure. But we need to start helping Iraq rebuild itself and giving the Iraqi people the resources they need to build an Iraq that's strong, that's democratic, that really can stand on its own. And that's not going to happen overnight. I mean, you know, Barack Obama has talked about taking 16 months to pull the American troops out, and hopefully 16 months is long enough to at least get the Iraqi government and the Iraqi army back on its feet. But who knows? I mean, we kind of have to wait and see how it plays out.
So, Joe, am I hearing you right in that you are saying that that even though that there's an awful lot of money being spent in Iraq, that now anyway we have to justify at least a large percentage of that to continue?
Right. I think, you know, we have to go ahead and finish the job, you know, and what finishing the job means, I think, is different things to different people. You know, some people want to Americanize Iraq. They want to try to create a little brother, so to speak, over there in the Middle East that operates the same way America operates. I think, you know, what we really need to do is allow the Iraqi people to decide how their country is going to be run. And in order to do that, you have to, you know, obviously subdue some of the violence that's going on over there, try to reduce the factional tensions, which have been going on for thousands of years, and, you know, we may never change that. So we have to let them decide how they're going to fix it. But we have to give them the resources to be able to do that. Obviously, with the condition that country is in, with the condition its economy is in, and the fact that its government still doesn't seem to be able to stand on its own two feet, I think we need to provide the support to enable them to do that And it's, yes, it's going to take more expenditure. We're going to have to, you know, invest more resources over there. But I think we have to change the way we're investing our expenditures and try to reduce the focus on military solutions and start to try to find some type of diplomatic and democratic solution to the problem over there.
All right, Citizen Joe Crisp, as we talk about things going on in national politics for the moment, we're going to take a quick break, 11:21 on the wake-up call. We come back, we're going to talk to Citizen Sean McCord about that, and Pete Ronayne is also in the studio today. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley, partly cloudy, afternoon showers and thunderstorms today, highs 85 to 90. Possible large hail and high winds tonight, along with clouds and showers and thunderstorms, 60 to 65, just upper 50s in the valley. Mostly sunny tomorrow, highs 90 to 95. All kinds of clouds and clearness across the listening area. 84 in the valley, 82 in Lynchburg, 82 in Richmond, 84 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, while 4-5-6 dials up and asks if clearness is a word, they're also supporting us today. If you have a project but not time, there's a simple way to find a contractor, from kitchen and bathroom remodeling, house painting to decks and siding. It's 4-5-6.com. Immediate. No obligation estimates available anytime. The number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. 11:22 here on the Wake Up Call as we talk about current politics. Our academic Pete Ronayne in the studio. Local citizens Joe Crisp and Sean McCord. Sean, we were talking about Iraq and the incredible amount of money you and Joe and as well as Pete talked about, how all the current poll topics list the economy, but everyone seems to feel that is all tied together with the amount of money being spent in Iraq. And I'd like your feedback on that, in terms of, if it's so much money, are we committed or are we somewhat forced by what we've done so far to stay there for a little while and continue to spend as much money, or at least a large percentage, as what we have?
Well, I think Joe had a very practical and pragmatic answer, and I think a lot of thinking people agree with it. I don't. I think we just need to get out. I think we're throwing good money after bad. You know, I've heard a lot of war proponents talk about achieving victory in Iraq, and yet I've never heard anybody really spell out what victory means. All of the milestones that we talked about, getting rid of the weapons of mass destruction that weren't there, getting rid of Saddam Hussein, allowing the Iraqis to self-determine. Well, we've done all that, and we're still there now, and we're sitting on top of a civil war, and I think it's become a matter of American pride, and I think that's a mistake. I think what we need now is a little bit of American humility. I think we need to turn to our global partners and say, you know what? We made a mistake. We shouldn't have gone in there. We need your help now, and we need to bring the entire world in and find a solution. We need to work with our partners in the Mideast. We need to work with our partners in Europe, and we just need to you know, tuck our tails between our legs and go home and start focusing on the important things at home.
All right, you're welcome to dial up and ask a question if you'd like. 971-4096, 971-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's what you get for not getting enough sleep last night. Pass that microphone over to our academic, because here's a question for you, sir.
I don't know if I like this labeling.
Yeah, well, sorry. When you come in with the words adjunct professor in front of your name, people are going to pick on you. Here's a question that someone dialed up with but didn't want to come on air. Are third-party candidates going to have any effect on the final results?
Well, it's an interesting question, and the candidates in this case are, again, Ralph Nader rearing his head, and Bob Barr, the former congressman from Georgia, who is running as a libertarian.
Because we have seen this happen over the last two decades, right?
Well, we have.
I mean, Perot had an effect on what happened?
Perot had a huge effect the first time out. I mean, you can certainly argue that. President Clinton becomes President Clinton in large part because of the Perot effect. Without that siphoning, et cetera, a lot of things had to align for Bill Clinton to win when he did, and the Perot factor certainly helped. We're not going to see a Perot-type impact. I mean, his vote getting in the end was pretty significant. The fact of the matter is, I think right now, I was looking at the numbers before I came in, and Nader's polling at about 6% right now, and Bob Barr, the Libertarian candidate, at about 3%. And a general rule of thumb is that come November, those third-party candidates generally get about one-half of the percentage that they're polling at in June and July. It tends to trail off. Now, it's not going to matter on a sort of national scale. Where it could matter is in local races, in particular in Bob Barr's home state of Georgia. Georgia, which is traditionally a GOP state, but is in play right now. Senator Obama's making a big play for the African-American vote there, really mobilizing that population. And the numbers are much tighter than the GOP would like to see in Georgia. So could Bob Barr polling in his home state at 5 or 6% make a difference? Absolutely. It could tip a pretty solidly or traditionally solid red state into the blue column. And that's something that the McCain campaign can very ill afford, the way that the electoral map is playing out. So to answer the caller's questions, nationally, I really don't think so. I don't see that type of impact. And Nader peaked an election or two ago. But that more local Bob Barr impact, I think seriously could have an impact that's going to matter, particularly to the McCain campaign.
All right, you can call in as well, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's the toll-free line for those of you further out as we talk current politics with our area citizens, Sean McCord and Joe Crisp, and the guy who knows a lot, if he doesn't want to be called an academic, Pete Ronayne. Although, that makes it sound like the other guys don't know a lot. See, so we're going to stick with academic.
Now you're slamming these.
Yeah, see, that's a no-win situation for me. All right, let's go back to the presidential race and the concerns that are getting the most attention. Now, we determined everybody seemed to be in accordance that the economy is number one, but it's really seriously affected by the poll items listed, 2, 3, 4, et cetera. I want to talk about energy for a moment. Offshore drilling has become, I guess, a big issue in regards to price of gasoline. Joe, you and I chatted briefly about offshore drilling, and I'd like to get your citizens' take on this.
Yeah, you know, I've been watching the news a lot and listening to the radio a lot about, you know, all the arguments back and forth about, you know, how do we solve this problem? And, you know, lately you've heard all of this debate over offshore drilling. We need to do more drilling off of our coast, and we need to open up ANWR so that we can, you know, exploit our resources there. And you keep hearing that word coming up.
ANWR, for those who don't, is the Alaska region.
National Wildlife Refuge, correct. And, you know, you keep hearing this word exploit, exploit, exploit. You know, look at our, you know, natural resources that we have here in the United States and off our shores. And let's take advantage of that and drain every last drop of oil that we can out of the continental shelf and the land that we have here in the United States. But, you know, you look at the other resources that are out there, the other technologies that we have, you know, wind power, solar power, you know, hydroelectric power. And then, of course, you have the clean coal proponents out there, too. But, you know, there's so many other resources out there, you know, both for automobiles and for, you know, powering our cities and our homes that really have kind of been ignored for the past, you know, I'll say 8 years. But also going back, you know, through the Clinton administration, we really didn't do everything we needed to do to wean ourselves off of oil. And it's not just foreign oil. You know, it's oil itself, you know, in my opinion, is just a bad fuel. I mean, we spend so much on it. It pollutes our air, you know, and it's just, you know, not the best option out there. We had this electric car out there. You know, Saturn had the EV1 years ago. And it really wasn't that long ago, but it got killed. I mean, it basically got killed by GM. It got killed by the automakers, by the government. There's a lot of culprits out there, but and of course, I just saw the movie Who Killed the Electric Car, so I'm kind of up on that. But you know, we had the technology. I mean, it's not like, you know, these technologies are far down the road. They're already here. They're out there, but we just don't have the political will to go ahead and force, you know, corporate America to start using those resources. If we could, you know, stop, you know, funding and providing tax cuts to companies that are doing the wrong thing and start giving tax cuts to people that are doing the right thing, so promoting the right technology and the technology that's going to make us a stronger America in the future because we're going to be energy independent, then, you know, I think we'd start going in the right direction. But it's the fact that we've been kind of working backwards and feeding and fueling the companies that are going in the wrong direction. I think that's where we made the biggest mistake.
Let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics for allowing us to have this this conversation today. You can find Blue Ridge Graphics at Mead Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom T-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. Sean, I'm interested in your take on that, because Joe is saying that, you know, oil is a bad fuel. Where does that list in your, you know, as the citizen, where does that list in your concern for the November election?
Well, I completely agree with Joe on that one. And I would like to see leaders of our party reminding the world that America can be a leader, just as we were, you know, with the when John Kennedy proclaimed that we'd be, go to the moon in 10 years. A few days ago, Al Gore went to a group and said, let United States be energy independent in 10 years. And instead of finding new ways to get the old fuel that even George Bush himself said a couple of years ago, that we're addicted to oil, and now our solution seems to be, well, let's go out and get some more of it. Well, yeah, if you know an addict, the solution for their addiction is not to find a new source for them to get more of it. It's to get cut off of it completely. So I say we should be a leader in the world in finding new and alternative sources of energy and taking advantage of this vast expanse of resources that we have right in front of us now. Solar power, wind power, tidal power. And yeah, maybe it's time to take a second look at nuclear power. As an old-time environmentalist, I didn't think I'd get to the point where I'd find myself saying that. I'd like us to come up with a solution for storing the waste. But there's also new technologies in there that we haven't really explored because we haven't looked at it in 20 years or more. So I say let the United States be a leader in these new and alternative versions and then bring the rest of the world with us, because it's not just a local problem anymore. It's a global problem anymore. Now, we may reduce our consumption, but if consumption is going up in China and India and other non-Western nations, then it's still going to impact our global environment.
Pete Ronayne from Federal Executive Institute and adjunct professor at UVA. These are, you know, Joe and Sean saying such nice things, and which to me are almost Pollyannish, because and I say that in what's meant to be a respectable manner, because I think if you poll, and you may have these numbers in front of you because you're always so up to date on the numbers. If you poll the average American, they would say similar, if not exact, things. Yes, you know, we know that we need to cut back. Yes, we need to find other methods. But nobody wants a nuclear power plant near them. Nobody wants a wind tower where they might be able to see it.
Right.
You know, few people are actually doing, and by few, yes, you can even pick the number 33%, but that's still the minority. Few people are actually doing anything about this, and I'm not sure, while the fuel issue may be number one on the list, it's all because of the gas price, not because it's the majority of people who think that we should rid our country of coal plants and find an alternative that they can actually live with. Yeah. Am I right about that?
A little bit. I mean, to build on what Joe and Sean both have said, I mean, what's fascinating about the energy issue is it is this pivotal point or issue where the economy and the environment and national security all merge, and they merge in very interesting and provocative ways. And I'll confess that just as an observer and an American, I'm surprised that all of a sudden – at the $4 a gallon price point that we've hit, now everybody is suddenly screaming. I really am surprised. I thought it would have to go longer than that. So it's somewhat startling to see this almost national reaction and call for some proactive measures. Now, to build on many of the points that these guys have already made, we have been addicted to one particular form of fuel, which is oil. Both political parties, it's easy to say rip on President Bush right now, but both political parties have been unwilling. I mean, Jimmy Carter was the first person to dare utter a word about a proactive sort of sacrifice-based energy policy, looking for others, and he was absolutely ridiculed and lambasted as weak, and it's practically un-American. And so that conversation went dormant for decades. So both sides of the political aisle have been unwilling to ask for what I think is a key word here, which is sacrifice, actually, because for this to happen, for us to wean ourselves off this oil addiction, it's not going to happen overnight. Even if you want to do the offshore drilling, for example, and a lot of people think that's a good part of the puzzle.
Aren't both parties now requesting that? Party leaders requesting that?
Well, if you're talking at the nominee level, no. I mean, Obama opposes the lifting of the ban. McCain supports it. But even proponents of that on the Democratic side in Congress or the Republican side recognize that that's certainly not a short-term fix. It's a 10 to 15-year down-the-road fix, and it would only be one part of a broader puzzle. Now, I think Sean and Joe both pointed out as well, whether you're on the GOP or the Democratic side, both candidates have ambitious energy plans. And again, it's fascinating to see this really emerging with such force. They differ in significant ways, but they're similar in that they're both calling for much larger investments in a range of options. I don't think either of them really believes that that oil is the future. I think Sean, you mentioned the NASA analogy, and in fact, Senator Obama pegs the number of $150 billion consistently to invest in new clean fuel technologies, et cetera. The reason he chooses that number is because that's the amount of money in today's dollars that was spent on the Apollo program from the mid-60s to about 1972. So it's trying to galvanize the nation in that same sort of way. Senator McCain tends to emphasize a bit more on the nuclear power piece. And Americans have come around on that. Again, I think Rick makes a good point in theory. 57% of Americans say, yes, we should build new nuclear power plants. 34% disapprove of that. But 57% is significant evolution because there was this visceral fear of nuclear power, particularly since the Three Mile Island accident. But we haven't built a new nuclear power plant in decades. So even that, it's going to take some time to get that power online. Nuclear power provides about 20% of America's electricity today, which I'm sure most Americans would be surprised to realize that it's that high. But he emphasizes nuclear power more than Obama. Obama emphasizing this $150 billion investment. But the oil issue is interesting because it's not just the economy. It's national security. It's this idea of weaning ourselves off. There's still a relatively low percentage of Mideast oil. I mean, I think most Americans would be surprised to know where we get the majority of our number one importer to the U.S. for oil. Do you have any idea who that is?
Someplace in South America.
It's not, actually. Mexico is third. Venezuela is fourth as exporters to the U.S.
Canada. All right.
Canada. Yeah, it's Canada, actually. So when we talk about weaning ourselves off of foreign oil, I chuckle initially, like, oh, yes, the dreaded Canadians are you know, holding this over our heads. But Canada by far.
All right, that's an A for Joe.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, he's in the plus column.
An A for our citizens. I flunked that all my homework.
But I think it's fascinating to see these two candidates trying to lay out very proactive, and I would argue, again, whether you're GOP or Democrat, they're fairly visionary approaches, different points of emphasis, but they're trying to be ambitious. There's no doubt about it.
11:39 here in the wake-up call. Dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877 WNRN Rocks. Just before we take a break, here's a comment from Doug in Richmond. Rich getting richer, poor keep getting poor. I can't afford a car, and some people are driving big SUVs. I don't think Doug's the only person who can say that.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins and Tiger Fuel, and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
In the early 1980s, VDOT announced plans to run the Western Bypass from Forest Lakes to UVA's North Grounds. Residents of Squirrel Ridge, a little subdivision in that path, have suffered in limbo all this time. Charlottesville City Council approves the $7.5 million downtown mall project. Read all about it. And Dr. Hook shares his serves up thoughts on salmonella. The hook applied generously to all areas of the skin. Make sure to rub gently in those sensitive spots. And support for WNRN this hour has come from Alt Energy of Charlottesville, designing and installing solar energy systems in Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Alt Energy solar systems are now practical and reliable and can pay for themselves in a few years while reducing your carbon footprint. You can also make a difference by showering instead of taking a bath and having the kids turn off the lights when they leave a room. More is at altenergyincorporated.com. And not that you would, but don't go anywhere at noon because Drew Thompson will be here for Les Temps Purdue. If French isn't your thing here at NRN, that means the time's gone by. And on the station, that means late 80s through 90s alternative. Tune in for it. Next, Les Temps Purdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. All right, so we do the underwriting for Alt Energy appropriately as we're talking about alternative energy. Pete Ronayne here in the studio, UVA adjunct professor and author and professor at the Federal Executive Institute. Local citizens Sean McCord and Joe Crisp also with us as we talk about current politics. Pete, what is the acceptable number one alternative energy to fossil fuels?
Acceptable in terms of what?
Well, with the local citizen votes to be, okay, if we have to, you know, if the coal plants are killing us in the air and we're going to run out of fossil fuels, you know, oil-type products in, 20 years and it's going to be this expensive, what are the acceptable alternative energies?
Well, I think what we mentioned before, the wind and solar options, I think, tend to be fairly neutral in people's reactions. Now, in Massachusetts, for example, there's this big to-do because they don't want the wind farms off the coast because they think it's going to destroy the pristine view, et cetera. But I think wind and solar, to most Americans on at least an initial reaction level, are the least impactful and have sort of carry the lesser of a immediate sort of negative reaction. They're almost value neutral, so they seem like they make sense. I don't know a lot of Americans know a lot about tide power, for example. But I also think a second one that is being mentioned a bit more certainly by McCain, and if you've seen the ads by T. Boone Pickens on TV, the Texas oil tycoon guy who's got his own plan now to make us energy sufficient. It's natural gas. Natural gas, which is a huge resource in the U.S. I think myself included, a lot of Americans don't have a lot of understanding about what that means operationally, but that it's such a huge resource. I don't think there is that strong negative reaction to that. So solar, wind, and natural gas seem to kind of top the list. And that's not surprising.
All right. You mentioned advertising during that. So let's take a moment and switch to advertising. I'm curious, we talked about this briefly, ads that one candidate is putting out there for another. And to me, one form of advertising that has grown dramatically in the last decade or so, I think for most folks, the traditional bumper sticker or yard sign is still there a little bit, although you don't see anywhere near as many as you used to, and maybe that's because it's July. And we've still yet to get to them. The media ads on radio and TV certainly will grow as there's more money. I think for many folks, that's you want to put that in at the last minute so that you remember the last thing that you saw. So we haven't seen as many of those yet. But media clips also seem to be a huge part of advertising, which is you do something so that the media will cut the 10 seconds into what is an advertising piece for you. And although Barack Obama went to Iraq and other European countries as much to offset what many said was his lack of knowledge about those things, he also received so much positive media interpretation from this. PETA, am I in the wrong area when I talk about this?
No, I mean, there's been a lot of conversation about the about that that very issue.
I mean, it was almost made fun of the difference that McCain is in a grocery store to offset his lack of lack of knowledge about the basic, you know, economic family's problems.
Right.
And he's in, I think I heard on the drive in this morning, people making fun of him that he was, instead of being in the country of Germany, he was in a German restaurant.
He was in a German restaurant in Ohio or something like that. Yeah.
Right. But is this the way that the candidates are now taking that, you know, almost free use of this as a, you know, as a campaigning tool?
Well, I think the Obama trip to Israel, the Middle East, and Europe is a fascinating case study, and the jury's going to be out on this one for a while because, again, it gets a lot of a flurry of attention right now for a whole host of reasons, and it's a fascinating dynamic because first off, Senator McCain basically taunted Senator Obama to do this sort of thing. Well, why don't you go abroad and talk to some people and round out your skills? And then Obama goes, and McCain says, "Oh, well, this is, you know, this is diplomacy light, and this is unfair. You're getting all this sort of coverage, et cetera." So it's sort of interesting dynamic in the background. I would argue that, and it has nothing to do with being pro Obama or pro McCain, et cetera. Now, I was thinking about this coming in as well. At least the staging of Obama's events, and not just the speech in Germany, but I think that the people that he has around him, for whatever reason, have been much more masterful at staging events for their symbolic value. I wrote down, and the word that I use is almost Reagan-esque. I mean, Reagan was a master at political theater and the symbolism of politics. Whatever you think about him in partisan terms or policy-wise, I mean, truly the great communicator. And, you know, there are little bits of that, and not just Obama himself, but in the way that his team is managing those clips that you're talking about. Some things you can't manage, they just have to happen. But I mean, let's face it, having 200,000 Germans show up waving American flags, I mean, whatever you think, that's an image. I mean, that's powerful. And for, I think, most casual observers of American politics, which is most Americans, they're going to only get a little, they're not going to sit down and listen to the whole speech. They're not even going to go to YouTube and listen to the whole speech. They're going to see that brief little bit, as you mentioned, Rick, on the news, maybe 10 or maybe 15 seconds maximum. What they're going to take away is Obama, 200,000 people, flags waving. I mean, that was impressive. Now, will its shelf life be, you know, through this weekend and it'll be quickly forgotten? Will it bolster Obama in any meaningful sort of way? That really is very difficult to determine right now. But I think in terms of those, the clips that you talked about, sound and video bites, it just seems to me that his team, and it's partly the candidate's charisma to be sure, but the Obama team has proven themselves, I think, a bit more adept at staging those sorts of things. And McCain is a victim of bad luck, certainly in this case. Yeah, well, he was supposed to go out on an oil rig, which probably would have been ill-timed as well. But nonetheless, he was going to go out on an oil rig to talk about these issues. You know, the storm came up, so he couldn't go on that. Obama's, you know, getting adulation in France and Germany while he's in Iraq. It was poor timing. It wasn't a great week for McCain in terms of the staging, in terms of the clips, et cetera. But who knows what next week will bring.
Well, pass that over to Joe Chris, because, Joe, you're sitting there nodding your head. And I'm curious, so it seems to me that you're in agreement that the sort of news media clips are free advertising, or it's obviously not free because someone had to pay for him to go over there. But aren't you also somewhat dependent on how the media presents it? Because I'm sure that there was something that happened during this, what was it, 4-day trip, 5-day trip, that the media could have clipped 10 seconds worth and put that on the air instead. So aren't you also sort of running your hope that you will be presented in a good way, even if there's 200,000 Germans, you know, waving a flag? There had to be a couple of them that were misbehaving, so to speak.
Right. You know, I think Pete was absolutely right. You know, it's been amazing to watch how masterful Obama's campaign has been in managing this whole trip and planning everything out and knowing ahead of time what the reaction was going to be in each of these areas and helping really kind of guiding the press and really you know, exploiting those things. And a lot of it, I think, has to do with the fact that he has had such a positive reaction in the places he's gone. I mean, like Pete said, this reaction he had in Germany was just amazing. You know, you really haven't seen anything like that since Kennedy's Ike 9 Berliner speech over there, you know, back in the 60s. But I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that the American people want to see America becoming popular again, and Europeans and other people throughout the world reacting in a positive way to America. And I think there's a sense of patriotism and pride in the way that Obama has been able to stir that up and reignite that idea of America being the good guy. And I think people react to Obama that way. They see his messages, you know, this message of hope, obviously, you know, that he's always preaching about. But this idea that America can be a positive leader again, that we can't just go out there and impose our will upon the rest of the world and expect them to love us, but that we have to be cooperative partners with the rest of the people throughout the world, especially in Europe and in the Middle East. But I think that's a big part of it. I think the American people just they crave that, and obviously, you know, the people that are going to support Obama are going to support him either way. But I think it helps a lot with the people that thought, well, he doesn't really have that much currency overseas. People don't know who he is. You know, he doesn't have the foreign affairs experience that McCain has. I think it's a great thing for that campaign for him to go over there and to have such an overwhelmingly positive reaction to him.
Sean, question for you. As this, what seems to have been almost fully positive, at least media positive trip for Barack Obama. Near the end, for whatever reason, and it's kind of been shot from two sides. Oh, the Pentagon didn't let me. Oh, he chose not to. He did not visit with wounded American soldiers, and that was brought up by the daily regular forms of the media. And John McCain's group immediately jumped on that. I believe that there's already an advertisement out in three key states about how he personally chose not to visit with them and would rather have met with foreign leaders and excite 200,000 Germans in square. What's your take on that?
Well, I don't really know the truth behind this. I have also heard...
Well, the Pentagon came out and said, we didn't stop him from going.
Yeah.
Isn't that right, academic?
Yeah, I'll hop on after.
Okay.
I have also heard that because this turned into such a media circus that he didn't want to be seen exploiting wounded soldiers. Honestly, the kind of person he strikes me, I'll give that some currency. And if he had, if we did have pictures of him... You know, visiting soldiers in who were wounded in the hospitals, you can bet that the McCain campaign would have jumped on that too. Oh, he's never been a veteran. He's never been wounded. He doesn't know what these guys have gone through. This was just a photo op. So in that sense, there was no way that he could win.
Yeah, and I'll just jump in. I would agree with that. It's a perfect political opportunity for the McCain campaign to exploit. I don't necessarily fault them for that. This is hardball. I mean, the stakes are pretty high, and right now, at the end of this week, that McCain campaign is looking for any edge, any angle with which they can blunt the more or less positive week that Obama has had. So I think it's sort of a win-win for the McCain campaign, and it's a lose-lose for Obama, because I think Sean's right either way. I mean, if he goes, they say, oh, he's using troops as a political backdrop. This is a political exercise. If he doesn't go, then he doesn't care, et cetera. And this was, you know, one of the challenges of this trip for Obama was to, they tried to walk this very fine line between not coming across as overtly a campaign type trip, you know, that he's part of a senatorial delegation, because it's not just him. There are other senators over there,
Chuck Hagel
is with them, and Reed, yes, and And so trying to walk that fine line genuinely or not. And I think that's delicate. The other line that he's been trying to walk as well is the arrogance line. Is he's the presumptive nominee, but is it presumptuous to be over there meeting with foreign leaders, et cetera? I mean, the case can be made kind of on either side, but he's tried to walk that line and not be too sort of full of hubris and look at me and kind of, as one observer said, you know, spiking the ball in the end zone a little bit prematurely. And again, it remains to be seen what effect this will have, if any. I read there was a great line in the, it's actually in the Post today. It was a Republican strategist who pointed out that what Obama's trying to answer is still the question of who is this guy. People know who McCain is. And what this strategist said that is, quote, John McCain is complete. Barack Obama is completing himself. The question is, will he finish that job by November? And that's a wonderful way of phrasing it. McCain's a pretty known quantity, a known commodity. I mean, his positions on most issues aren't going to surprise anybody at this point. But still, for a lot of Americans, they don't really know who Barack Obama is. As a part of his relative inexperience, lack of national exposure up until very recently. So he's still sort of taking shape, and that's a wonderful question to ask. Will he take shape in time by November to satisfy and comfort that sort of 15% of undecided voters?
All right, 11:56 here at the Wake Up Call. Let's make sure to thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports. They are your local source for camping, backpacking supplies, kayaks, canoes, and outdoor footwear. With current gas prices and airfares, Blue Ridge Mountain Sports encourages you to discover the outdoor adventures right on your doorstep. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville, at Wintergreen, and they're in Richmond, and at brms.com. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Lynchburg Amherst. And we are here finishing up our show on current politics with Joe Crisp and Sean McCord, our area citizens, and Pete Ronayne, UVA adjunct professor, author. And is your title professor at Federal Executive Institute?
Oh, it's something lofty like senior faculty or something
senior
like
faculty.
That.
Senior faculty. Ooh.
There are no junior faculty, so it doesn't really matter.
I'm getting a little, my hair's getting all excited there.
That's TMI.
All right. Real quick here. We only have a few minutes left. Vice presidents, and I'm going to, Pete, let you talk about this, because there was something this week or in the last few days about a particular Republican individual being mentioned as a possible vice presidential candidate with Barack Obama. Is this just tossing names out, or is this a real possibility?
I don't think it's as big a possibility as some people would like it to be. I mean, I think it. We've talked about this before, but the fact that it's even on the table for discussion and people take it seriously suggests something different about the nature of this campaign. That at least in some people's minds, clearly Obama supporters, he's perceived as this post-partisan candidate, if you will, that he tries to promote himself as, obviously successfully promoting him as that he might even consider choosing a Republican. I don't think that's going to happen. I think, you know, Obama still has internal party issues and rifts, et cetera. The Democratic Party is notoriously fractious. That choosing a member of the GOP would probably be problematic for him. So I think it's fun talk, and we get all worked up about VP issues. In fact, the McCain campaign this week kind of sent out a little bit of messaging that maybe they'd be making their choice very soon. Now, people were questioning, is that true, or are they just trying to get on the news radar, you know, while Obama's in Europe? But I, at this point, I would be surprised if he went the GOP route. It would be exciting, but surprising.
Are either, both, or neither candidates, presumptive candidates, going to name their vice presidential, individual before we get to the conventions?
Oh, absolutely. There's a strong argument that they absolutely will. The Olympics thing comes up again. That's one of the reasons why they're arguing McCain will go first, regain some time in the news, get it out there before the Olympics, because that's going to dominate the month of August. And if he waits too long, the Democrats have their convention August 25th to 28th. If he's going to wait to name somebody until after the Democrats go, then he'd basically be naming his VP the day after Obama gives his acceptance speech, which isn't the best timing either. So that's why we might see McCain. We very well could see McCain go before August 5th.
All right. Thanks for participating in today's show, everyone. Pete Ronayne, Sean McCord, Joe Crisp, thanks for coming in, guys. I appreciate it. Next week, join us again. We'll be here at 11 o'clock for the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Drew Thompson here for Les Temps.
This has been your Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on WNRN. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon Gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.org. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Michael Strickland. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake-Up Call, only on WNRN.